It's 1:05. This is the meeting of the House Judiciary Committee. It is Wednesday, March 18th. With us today are Representative Clayman, Representative Lynn, Representative Foster, Representative Grunberg, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Representative Ledoux, Chair. Everybody, please turn off your cell phones. We have one previously heard bill before us today. That is HB 15, credits for time served, sponsored by Representative Wilson. This is the second time that we've heard this bill. I was hoping to move it out today, but there's been a slight delay, and the bill will hopefully be taken up next week. The bill sponsor, Tammy Wilson, is here with us today. We have a new CS for this bill, 29-LSO102-P. May I have a motion to adopt this new CS?
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt LS-0102-P, PAPA, of HB 15 as a working document for discussion.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, the CS for House Bill 15 is before the committee for purposes of discussion. Representative Wilson, could you please place yourself on the record and brief the committee on the new CS version P for House Bill 15?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent North Pole District 3. And I know there's also been a little confusion because we had a prior work draft that had not been adopted as we've been working through our way of this simple bill that became very complicated that I'm hoping went back to a little bit more simple, Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson, you've been here long enough to know that there is no such thing as a simple bill.
Madam Chair, we keep hoping. Remember, I am from Christmastown. So with that, just to remind you a little bit what the last bill was about, it was about electronic monitoring. It was also about good time. And two issues that I think are very important as we look at better ways to make sure that recidivism continues to go down. What this bill has done now is we're talking about just electronic monitoring. We're no longer talking about good time of any kind of issues. And so one of the things you will see on P, Madam Chair, is that, again, if the person has committed another criminal offense, you won't be able to get any kind of counting the days that you are. Because what you are right now is if you're sitting in jail, even pre-trial, those days all count. And what we're hoping to do is that with electronic monitoring, you're able to keep your job, get treatment if it's necessary, be able to do those things while you're awaiting trial to help you get back on track versus basically incentivizing you sitting in jail where at most facilities, if you're in pretrial, you don't really even have a lot of treatment that's available until once you've been convicted and you're within, you know, underneath the Department of Corrections. But one thing you also heard about last time is that you have to have specific parameters. You can't just be sitting home and watching video games. And we work with Mr. Savotny, and as you'll see, at the bottom goes over to page 2, it says court appearances, meeting with counsel, period during which a person is at a location ordered by the court for the purposes of employment, attending an educational or vocational training, performing community volunteer work, or attending a counseling or medical appointment. And these will be decided by the judge whether or not you are able to do electronic monitoring. Everyone is not necessarily eligible for that. That is determined by the courts. And Madam Chair, we did have a couple concerns by the Department of Corrections that we received late last night, and that was to make sure that it would be in the state of Alaska. If you cross and go down into California, Indiana, those a whole lot of other rules on that, and hopefully Ms. Mead could just clarify that again will be up to the courts. And the other concern was, do we need to have any type of who's the monitoring going to be by? And again, it's my understanding the courts determine what type of electronic monitoring you must have depending upon why you are awaiting trial in the first place. So with that, that's an overview of where we are, just a one concept. This is only pre-trial. Also, it's not just about electronic monitoring private. DOC does have in statute that they may do it. They don't want to compete, which we like that idea. However, there are still opportunity in other areas of the state that there isn't a private vendor that we would hope that once this is passed, the Department of Corrections will look at, because we're paying some really high cost to incarcerate those who are then just sitting and awaiting versus going out and keeping their job or getting the kind of therapy that they need so that they could be more productive, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And this, Representative Wilson, this is just for retrial. This is not subsequent to conviction and sentencing?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Does anybody else have any questions? Representative Grunberg.
And this may also be for Ms. Mead, but I'd like folks to focus on the phrase, page 2, line 3, at a location ordered by the court. I'm just wondering if every time the person goes to, let's say, I go to my diabetes doctor and they order me to have some tests at one place or another, would I have to go to a court back each time? I'm trying to make sure we don't overburden the court and either the sponsor or the court representative to answer that.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, it is my understanding that there is a process to do it, but you do need permission. It is, and that's for electronic monitoring, even in its current form.
I'll ask the person from the court system.
Ms. Mead, would you like to come up here and try to answer the question? Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for the record. My name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and I'd be happy to kind of talk a little bit about how electronic monitoring works from the court's point of view pretrial. So the way it works now is that the court sets bail conditions and the person either makes the bail conditions and gets out, or they can't meet the bail conditions, whether they don't have the cash or they can't find a third-party custodian or whatever it may be. If they don't meet the bail conditions, they, as the sponsor explained, stay in jail. The court has no authority over the person in jail pretrial. The court cannot say to the Department of Corrections and put this person out on electronic monitoring. That is solely within the authority of the Department of Corrections. So if the person doesn't make bail, the court doesn't order them onto EM. They're just left at DOC. And again, as the sponsor mentioned, DOC has the authority to keep people in custody anyway it deems fit, I suppose, within reason. They can keep people at Goose Creek. They can put people on electronic monitoring or whatever. But the court can't order DOC to do something in particular with somebody who's there either pretrial or post-trial for that matter. But the thing that does happen is that sometimes people can't make their bail, but they want very badly to get out. And say their condition was to have a third-party custodian, they themselves through their public defender or otherwise hire a private vendor to be their almost like a professional third party custodian, and they propose this person vendor to the court. They bring the person to court and say, Judge, you ordered me to have a third party custodian. I can't find a suitable person. How about this as a bail condition? I'll take this company. They will put an electronic bracelet around my ankle, and they will make sure I'm following my bail conditions and whatever else. And the court will examine that vendor and accept or not accept them, depending on the circumstances of the case of the individual defendant. So those are the private vendors that I think this bill would attempt to cover. So if the defendant hires that company, they pay the company, and then later, at the time of sentencing, the defendant comes in and says, okay, you sentenced me to 2 years, but, Your Honor, I spent 6 months paying this company. I was on EM, and I want 6 months credit for it. And under this bill, the court would presumably give the 6 months credit for the time you spent under electronic monitoring. So a couple of things I was discussing with the sponsor's office before this. Again, the court does not order anyone onto EM, but they allow it if the person proposes it as an option. The person pays the vendor, and my understanding is that there are these options, these private vendors, in certain communities but not in other communities. So I know there's a vendor in Anchorage. There's one. I believe there's a vendor in the Valley, by which I mean Palmer Wasilla. There's one in Fairbanks, and there's one in Kenai. I don't know if there are others. Perhaps somebody on the phone or something could know. So so that's where this could work, and those vendors, again, charge the defendant. And my understanding is the charge for that is somewhere around the $500 per month range, and I could be wrong on that, but that's my vague understanding. But those people then are restrained, and when the judge agrees to this proposed condition by the defendant, the judge fills out a bail order form. Here are the things you must do. They might say you have to go get a urinalysis twice a week, you might have to do this, but when they put the person on the electronic monitoring, they can give, in some instances, exclusion zones. You can't go within X block radius of, for example, the victim or something. The judge would, our standard bail order doesn't let people leave the state, so the question of people being on this through a private vendor and being out of state, I don't think would be a problem. And I think that's all I had, unless somebody had questions about how that works.
So this happens now, but the only difference between this bill and now is that now the court, you don't get any reduction from your sentence if you go this way.
To the chair, that's correct. You might have paid for 6 months to the vendor, but then when you're sentenced to 2 years, you still have to serve your 2 years. So I believe the intent of the sponsor is to, because you were in some ways restrained pre-trial, you should get credit day by day or month by month for that time that you were, in some ways, had your freedom restrained.
So is there any equal protection argument that it's not fair if the people who can afford to pay for the electronic monitoring don't have to go to jail, but those that can't afford it do have to?
To the chair, I understand your point completely. I won't say whether there is or is an equal protection problem there. It does apply differently. If you can afford to hire the company, you will get out of jail, and if you can't, you don't. I mean, I guess you could say that about any bail. If you can afford the $1,000, you're out of jail, and if you can't afford the $1,000 bail, you're in jail. So I don't know I just don't know about the equal protection claim.
Representative Klayman?
I'll ask the question to you, Ms. Mead, but if this is better for the sponsor, I'm happy to answer. But this bill, in fact, represents a substantial departure from what has been the pattern in terms of credit for what happens pretrial, because right now the only places in which you can get pretrial credit for time served, meaning before you've been convicted or pled guilty, is if you're going to some kind of a treatment program under the Nygren case and the statute that later tried to pattern after Nygren, so that you're only getting credit if you're actually going to something that's related to reform and rehabilitation. And under this bill, it doesn't matter. It would be sort of like what Mr. Svobodny's example was at the last hearing. I'm on electronic monitor. I'm living with my mother. That's worse than being in any prison on earth. But that person would, under this bill, would be entitled, not just at the judge's discretion, but under this bill, it would be required to give that person who's on electronic monitoring pre-trial credit for that time on electronic monitoring, which represents a fairly substantial policy change in terms of what the courts have been doing about pre-trial credit for time served.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, yes, this is a policy change, and I don't intend to speak for the sponsor, but there has been talk in the building and in committees and elsewhere about about the smart justice reforms and about changing the way we do business and perhaps changing the what we have is an awful lot of people in jail pretrial. And to address that, there are other changes being talked about, but this is a change, and the courts haven't allowed it before because the statute has specifically said it is not allowed. It says the court may not grant credit for time spent on electronic monitoring. So this would change that.
Follow up. But one of the differences, too, because this particular proposal talks about that it shall grant the credit for electronic monitoring, it actually takes discretion away from the judge in an instance when the judge might, using Mr. Svobodny's example, conclude that although the defendant says living with mom is horrible, the judge might very well conclude that that isn't enough restriction and choose that that shouldn't be entitled to time credit, whereas another circumstance on electronic monitoring, the judge could very well conclude there is reasonable, it would be reasonable in that case for the judge to grant, it would be reasonable for the judge to grant the credit for the time on electronic monitoring, mm-hmm. but under this statute, it would be kind of ironclad if you're on electronic monitoring, you're getting day-for-day credit before you've been sentenced.
And through the chair, Representative Klayman, I understand what you're saying. This says the court shall, which sounds like there is no discretion on the part of the judicial officer to determine whether or not to give the credit. It also says, though, at line 10 on page 1, line 12, if the court finds that the restrictions imposed are equivalent to incarceration, so the court has to make a finding before it grants it. So it would have to consider what the judge would have to say, well, let's see what this electronic monitoring was like, and then if it is like incarceration, though, they must grant the credit. That's my read of the bill.
Representative Grunberg, then Representative Keller, and then I've got a question for the bill sponsor.
Very recently, in the state of Washington, two or three courts have come out with a very important development in the bail issue. And I have a newspaper article, and I'm trying to get a hold of the cases themselves. It's actually not a bail issue, but it deals with the inability to pay a fine. And if you have the ability, you pay the fine. But if you can't, you go to jail. And the courts have found that to be a denial of equal protection, discriminating against the poor. And it's several courts. And it directly has an analogy here, because the only people who can get out are the people who confront the money to pay these vendors. If you have $500, you get out for employment, and you earn the money to pay the next month. And so if you have the upfront money, you can get out, and if you're too poor for that, you can't, and I'm going to find those cases. And not only that, but you'll get the credit. And so the question is, do the poor, can they ever get the credit because they can't front the money the first time to pay the $500 a month? And not only that, but if it's only available in one or two places in the state, if you don't happen to live in those places and you can't take advantage of this, then you can't get out for employment, and you can't get any credit. And I can't ask you as a representative of the court system whether you see any legal problems. And I don't know what I can ask you, but I can ask you any comment.
And before you comment, I just want to note that Representative Millett has joined us.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I would just have a couple of comments about that. First of all, the $500 a month, I I wouldn't swear that that's the price, and perhaps some vendors might slide the price, but I don't have the exact information on that. So that was a ballpark figure that I put out there. And I would also point out that the bill has it for private or DOC electronic monitoring. So if DOC does the EM in Barrow or Sitka, then the person would get credit for time spent. Well, they couldn't make bail, but again, it's up to DOC what to do with anybody in their jurisdiction, any of their population. And DOC can put people on electronic monitoring well pre-trial, so those people would get credit under this bill as well. And other than that, I don't have any responses to your comments.
May I follow, please?
Sure.
I will be asking I'll ask the sponsor the question later. The question is going to be, would the sponsor accept an amendment to require the state to pay the cost for people who can't afford to pay? That's going to be a question for her, just serving notice. The other question, though, is a question I asked earlier, which is page 2, line 3, at a location ordered by the court. Do you read that as, let's assume that that could be read as requiring the court to entertain an application each time the person needed to get a lab test or each time they changed employment from one McDonald's to another or whatever it would be. Mm-hmm. Do you see that taking much time from the court? If so, would there be a likely fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I see your point about that, and I think what would typically happen is as the judge released somebody on bail, they have standard conditions and things like you can't leave the state, and they would presumably say, okay, you are released into the custody of this vendor who will put the ankle bracelet on you, and during the time that you're in that person's custody and they're watching you, here are the places you're allowed to go. You can go to doctor's appointments, you can go meet with counsel, you can go to court appearances, you can go to school, you can go to your job, you can go to your community, everything that's listed in the bill, and that would be their order. And the vendor would be writing those down and ensuring that those are the places that the people, those are the only places that the person goes so that they are complying with the court order. That's how I would envision this working.
One more final. That makes me feel somewhat more comfortable. With that, not the other issue. Thank you.
So perhaps the Representative Kenner, did you have a question before?
Go ahead. No big rush, but
comparison between the person that can pay bail and the person that can't pay bail brings to mind another situation, and that is, what about the person that can provide a third-party custodian versus a person that cannot? I would assume if this bill passes, the court is making a determination based on whether or not a particular company, private company or commercial company, is trustworthy, valid, appropriate, that kind of thing. So, and of course, the court, as a rule, if there's any conditions to bail, is making determinations on what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, you know, for a particular bail amount. And what I'm wondering is that, please help me understand what the difference would be between a third-party custodian that was very secure in the eyes of the court to the person that has a electronic monitor. It seems like they ought to be treated the same, and therefore maybe the bill ought to be expanded to that. I guess a question would be, is there statutory guidelines for conditions of bail, or is that purely the discretion of the judge?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, there are a number of statutes that set out the bail conditions that a judge may order. The main one is 1255.011, it might be, and it has 18 possible things that a judge may order in any case, and it's followed by a specific statute about bail conditions that can be ordered in domestic violence cases in addition to those, and additional bail conditions that can be ordered in alcohol-related cases, etc. So the courts can only order something that's listed in those statutes, but I will say that one of the conditions is a catch-all or anything else that the judge deems to be necessary to protect public safety. And so judges do have general things that are standard, and they have other things that they can order. And so a third-party custodian versus giving credit for time spent with a third-party custodian versus giving credit for time spent on electronic monitoring would be a policy call, certainly, of the legislature. I do believe that the sponsor was aiming towards something that's close enough to some sort of custody situation that it would be more acceptable policy-wise, but that would be completely up to this group.
Go ahead.
So you're saying the bill before us, then the trigger for whether or not you get good time or not is purely the electronic monitor, not any criteria that the court may use. It is purely whether or not an electronic monitor is used in the bail situation.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, that's how I read the bill. And as Representative Clavin said earlier, people get credit for time served in treatment programs if those treatment programs are residential and have certain constraints that make it resemble the functional equivalent of jail, where you don't have freedom. And this would be just one expansion to that. The only other way that court can give credit for time served, it doesn't have discretion to do it otherwise, would be for the electronic monitoring that meets the words of this bill, as I read it.
This is a clarification. I think I know the answer, but just for the record, the bill also proposes day for day, hour for hour. There's no formula. Yet time on a monitor is the same as time in jail, right? Am I right there?
As I read the bill, it would be time for time, equal. I don't know how to say that very well.
So right now, I understand things correctly. The court can release somebody to a third-party custodian, correct?
If that's a bail condition, sometimes
okay.
They don't.
But electronic monitoring is sometimes used instead of a third-party custodian.
To the chair, that's a way to look at it, yes. If the judge says you must have a third-party custodian, most people would like to get a third-party custodian, but they can't find anybody in their lives with the appropriate background or lack of background that the judge will approve.
Gotcha.
And so they say, here's a gentleman that you, Your Honor, have seen here many times. You've seen his business. You trust him. I'm going to pay him, and he'll be almost like a professional third-party custodian to me.
So this would probably be a question for the bill sponsor as opposed to you, Ms. Mead. So maybe you could join the bill sponsor so that we can have you both up here. So if electronic monitoring is supposed to be taking the place of a third-party custodian, why wouldn't you, if it's a good idea to give credit for somebody who is being electronically monitored, why wouldn't you also want to give credit to somebody who has the third-party custodian?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question. You cannot know where someone is all the time unless you never sleep, and you're literally going to be hooked to them for all times. And let's use, one of the biggest issues we have here are DUIs. If you have electronic monitoring for DUIs, if you take a drink, don't have to be over your limit, just a drink, the monitor is going to tell you that. Could any one of you tell me as a person who's going to watch someone that you would be able to absolutely tell the courts you knew where they were at all times and that they never took a drink? I would doubt that seriously, and I think that's where the difference is right here, is that you have a very impartial, because it's an ankle monitor, so it doesn't like you or dislike you, and it's going to be recording exactly where you've been, exactly whether or not you've taken any drugs or drink, it would depend upon what kind of monitor that you're on, and be able to show the courts that you did exactly what they asked. And I'm not saying a third party would necessarily lie, you just got to sleep at some point. You know, and you just would not be able to say that without a doubt that you knew where that person was at all times and didn't violate any of the conditions. And I'm sure if I can answer Representative Grunberg's question, there is money funding through Health and Social Services. We've had this question on just electronic monitoring. Once you're incarcerated, what happens for those people who can get out because they have money? What if I can do those same things, but I don't have the money? And they assured me that there is a way to be able to be on electronic monitoring even if you don't have the funds. And it's probably to make sure that everything is equalized out. So we did have that verified on a different issue that we had in finance at one time.
So this electronic monitoring that you're proposing is a specific kind of electronic, because that's not what it's, I'm not reading this in the bill, that you're under this and it can tell if you've taken a drink. Where is that in any place?
Well, Madam Chair, again, it's up to the courts. It's up to our judges, who are very amazing people. Just in case I'm in front of them at any time, you know. And so they get to choose. So you go in front of them on whatever you've been, you know, fine, you know, whatever puts you before them. They look at the monitoring and what you've done and says, will this help you get there? They can determine what type of monitor you're on. And whether or not you can utilize that. That's up to the court's discretion. We didn't list all the different kinds of monitors because, as you know, just with the computer age, things are changing faster than any of us could ever imagine they are. So as those keep changing, the courts will have more choices, and hopefully if this goes the way we hope it does, that there will be probably, you know, more vendors with more high tech to be able to utilize, you know, getting them back on track versus in jail. But I know the one for that they use for alcohol, I've heard from those who are on it, I've talked to the vendor who does it, and they can literally go down and take it to the court and be able to, without a doubt, prove that they have been able to meet or not meet the requirements, because every night it downloads. Because the other question we got, Madam Chair, is why not the 24/7 program? Why do we not give them credit? And that's the one where you go and you blow twice a day. Well, you're blowing your second time, right? Doesn't mean you can't go home and drink then. Again, it's not a way to really monitor in such a way to where you can go to the courts and say, I have met the conditions. And so this is, to me, about the next thing you get from being restricted into jail, which is your only other option at this point.
Very often, when a defendant doesn't present a flight risk or is not viewed as dangerous, I mean, judges won't just let people off on their own recognizance. Isn't that correct, Ms. Mead?
Yes.
So where would it come into play, either of you, where the judge might require electronic monitoring or would a professional third-party custodian?
To the chair and for the record, Nancy Mead from the Alaska court system. The bail statute sets as the default that people should get out on their own recognizance without conditions, but then subsection B says if the judge finds that the interests of public safety can't be adequately protected without restrictions, then the judge can impose any of the, as I mentioned before, 18 bail conditions listed, one being and anything else to protect the public safety. So again, what often happens is this would come in because either the person just doesn't make the conditions, doesn't have the $1,000 or $10,000 or whatever the bail amount is, and maybe if there is a third-party custodian, anyhow, they just can't make the bail conditions. They're left at DOC, and DOC, under this, currently can put people out on electronic monitoring. And This bill might encourage them to do it more, I'm not sure, but they can do it now, and those people who are out with DOC electronic monitoring pre-trial would get credit for that time. And my understanding, and I don't know this, but DOC might correct me, is that that would be at either a low cost or a sliding scale amount of cost to the person. So that can happen now. This bill might encourage more of that, and it might encourage, what it would encourage is that when those people are on DOC-sponsored or overseen monitoring, they would get credit, period. The other situation that we're talking about with the private vendors and those communities where they exist, again, the person can't make the third-party custodian requirement. That's usually the requirement that they would come back to the judge at a bail review hearing a few days later. You told me I needed a third-party custodian. I can't find an appropriate person, but I hired someone. And, Your Honor, you know him. You know he's going to make me appear. I'm going to pay him. And so that those are the situations that they would do it for a month or 2 months or 7 months before their trial occurs.
Representative Kenyon.
A couple of questions and then a couple shorter questions. Do you have any, either of you have any idea today how many people with departments of corrections who are post-sentence are currently on electronic monitoring and in the community?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I don't have that information.
Representative Klayman, through the chair, we heard that it was a couple of thousand, but it's down quite a bit to what it was even 5 years ago for whatever reason. What, you know, and just to follow up on that, that's one thing that, you know, that I started with this bill is because we learned that there people didn't understand even, and this is all post, that this existed, you know, and what there was to it. We talked to the department to try to figure out, well, why are they not? I mean, why would you, if you had a choice to be on electronic monitoring and post, it does count, versus sitting in jail, you know, what are the issues? And there are a lot of issues, and one of it is, you know, where are you going to live? You know, it happens to be one of the big issues that we have. And again, and that's what kind of brought me here on the pretrial portion of it, if people are able to keep their homes and keep everything going on in their lives if possible, they may not have that issue once you've sat in jail for a couple months. You may lose, you know, the rent on your home. Your job, you know, is probably gone at that point. And really is trying to look at a better way to be able to do what we're doing versus sitting in jail. And again, especially for pretrial, you're usually just sitting there. I mean, they, you know, they don't have a point at that point to do much treatment until you've been convicted.
Follow up to the chair. One of the things that Ms. Mead talked about was that there's the presumption that you're released on your own recognizance, and so when judges look at bail conditions, they're actually looking at the defendant, the crime that's involved, the defendant's criminal history, a whole range of factors in making a decision about what bail is appropriate. Mr. Representative Grunberg has raised questions about the affordability, but the, in general, this is a question for Ms. Mead. In general, the less serious crimes tend to have much lower bail amounts and much less restrictive bail conditions. And we get into electronic monitoring and third-party custodians as we get into more violent crimes, people who have longer criminal histories, people who raise greater concerns for the court in terms of protecting the public while they're awaiting trial. Am I missing something, or have I got that right?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I would agree with that.
Some further follow-up through the chair. And in terms of the distinction between third-party custodians and electronic monitoring, historically that hasn't been either or. There's many occasions when somebody is released to a third-party custodian thought to be represent certain dangers to the community, and they're released to a third-party custodian and an electronic monitor. It's not always just one or the other. Is that your experience as well?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I don't know that judges have the authority to order somebody onto electronic monitoring. And in fact, my information is that people are put on electronic monitoring only when they propose that as an alternative to the judge for something that the judge has ordered them to do. And most typically, it's third-party custodian. It might be something else.
Okay. Further follow-up. And, of course, somebody wants to get more access to electronic monitoring to do their time out of jail. One easy solution is they can plead guilty to the charge and get sentenced, and if corrections thinks they're appropriate to be on an electronic monitor, they could be out in the community the day after they're sentenced and out in the community on electronic monitor. This is really a small circle of people who can afford to pay for an electronic monitor, are charged with more serious crimes, and are trying to figure out a way to get out of jail while they're going forward.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I understand what you're saying. I don't know that it's a small group of people. I mean, I think what we're learning is there are a good number of people in jail pretrial who are not making their bail conditions. I've heard the number 40% of those who are in custody right now are in custody before they've been sentenced. And I can't verify that number, but I've certainly heard others say that. And so that would be the potential population that could maybe ask the judge to put me on EM. I mean, they haven't done it yet, and they can do it now. But this bill would perhaps encourage them to do it because they know they would be getting credit for that time, is how I understand it.
I've got a question for the sponsor and then Representative Keller. So I'm looking at line 12, I think it is, on page 1. Where the court is required to grant credit if it finds that the conditions imposed on the person's liberty while under the electronic monitoring are equivalent to incarceration. And then it has a bunch of including that they, court appearances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So are there any situations in which there would be court appearances required, meeting with counsel required, and the court saying that the person needs to be at a location ordered by the court for purposes of employment, etc., and the court might still find that the electronic monitoring while in a home is not equivalent to incarceration.
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to think of the political way of putting this. Okay, so the judge determines it to start with. So, you know, when you're before the judge is the one who says, you know, to the person, these are the things that, you know, you that are brought against you, and if you want to get out on electronic monitoring, here are the conditions that you have to provide. And so before the electronic monitor is even utilized, everybody is already in agreement on what how you have to perform. So to me, if you come back and you've performed all those things that the judge told you to, I guess I can't think of any reason why they would not give it to you, because again, it was set forward before you even left the courts. Now, if the judge didn't have any say-so on those, I think he would be absolutely correct. If you were leaving it up to the person to determine what their punishment should be. But the way this is stated is that the courts, the judge is the one who sets it out, and those are what you have to abide by. Then when you come back, if you know, and you've been found guilty of whatever it is, then they should be able to look and say, you did all the things I told you, therefore you get it, or you didn't do it. And in likelihood, if you didn't do it, you're probably sitting in jail and being brought in that fashion.
But then there's really, I mean, on one hand, it looks like you're giving the court discretion. And on the other hand, you're saying that there is no discretion. Because just because they're meeting their conditions of bail, court appearances, etc., does not necessarily mean that where they're living is equivalent to incarceration. Are you following me here? Where's the discretion? Or isn't there any discretion?
Oh, no, ma'am, I'm sure there is discretion. Absolutely. You know, and now I wish Mr. Spotney was here because we worked with him on this one, so I'm going to try to do him proud here. First
is
of all,
is there anybody from the Department of Law here?
Yeah, I think there might. But first of all, let me clarify to start with. So they don't have to put you on electronic monitoring. So that's first and foremost. They could say, you don't qualify or we don't want to put you on it. So that's the first thing. So just to get to that point.
And what situations could they deny?
On pretrial, it's completely, Madam Chair, up to the judge, based on what's in statute, whether or not you qualify. We're not changing any of those rules whatsoever. They already exist. The same ones that put you on electronic monitoring now through the private portions of it will still be able to be allowed. So the discretion, in my opinion, for the judge is at the very beginning when he sets out the restrictions. If he chooses not to set out the restrictions and says, no, for whatever reason, we're not going to look at this avenue, you're going to have to go in jail, you're going to have to pay $5,000, to me, their say-so is at the very beginning. But then to say once you've made that agreement and you have done everything you've been asked to do and then have to come back and say all of a sudden, well, you know, I thought about it a second time and I should have ordered these other things, I'm not sure that's a message a judge would even want to send in the first place.
Then why wouldn't it read, for example, a court shall grant credit against the sentence of imprisonment for time spent under electronic monitoring if the person has not committed a criminal offense while under electronic monitoring and the court finds that they defendant has made his court appearances, made his meetings with counsel, and has been at employment and or done his education, etc. I mean, there is a section in here which seems to allow the court a certain amount of discretion, and I'm just trying to figure out under what circumstances the court could use that discretion.
Well, Madam Chair, again, you know, by laying out 1, 2, and 3 on the other page, is a portion that the judges are talking about in the first place before you even leave the courtroom, and so you have set actions when you leave, and that's where their discretion is. They determine, they have already, once you get there, determined you have to show where you live. I mean, you can't just, you know, leave the courtroom and then email them back an address. All that has to be worked out between you and the private or DOC, depending upon who's going to do it, where you're going to be living, whether you have a job, whether you're going to go through treatment. You need to be able to show these three portions of it. So let's say you don't meet a court appearance. Well, you're going to be back in jail. Your electronic monitoring is going to be broken. You've broken the rules that you have. Let's say that you wandered off and went to the grocery store and that wasn't on the list. Again, you've broken your agreement. You're going to go back to it because it doesn't let you just go anywhere you want to. You are agreeing when you leave, just like you do for any kind of bail, that you will follow these rules. And if you don't follow these rules, then they're going to say you broke them immediately, that would be the electronic monitoring companies. They would have to notify the courts immediately and say this person has broken what they were supposed to do, and no longer would they be on electronic monitoring because of that. It's the same thing as if you paid your bail, maybe you put your $1,000 up and you didn't show up at the next court, they're going to put a warrant out for your arrest. Same thing would happen here.
Thank you. Further questions for either the bill sponsor or for Ms. Mead?
I'll pass.
Okay. Representative Tyman, then Representative Grunberg, and did you?
Just a couple of things. The questions that the chair is asking, which relate to this whole idea that you're basically confined to quarters except when you go do these other things under 1, 2, and 3, I don't see how the court doesn't have a lot of discretion to make decisions about whether they did or didn't comply with those different things. They could very well say, well, you missed one court appearance, and you lose whatever credit you might or might not get for the electronic monitoring. And there's a whole list of these things that they're kind of routinely allowed to leave the home for, but that could a court look and see, well, you're going to so many things, I find that this isn't equivalent to incarceration?
Representative Clayman, through the chair, again, it would be determined while you're there. The courts would say, what you couldn't go to, and not even when you get back to court again on the next appearance. If you went somewhere that you were not given privilege to do, it is up to the monitoring company to report that to the courts immediately, because again, just like a third party, if your mother was watching you, they would call the courts immediately and say, Johnny just went to wherever it was, and therefore they would put a warrant out for their arrest. The difference is here is that the company themselves have to do that, because if they don't do that, there's not going to be any judges who are going to say, go use this company, because they're not abiding by the rules. And again, as Ms. Mead said, that company comes with you to the court hearing, and they're listening, and that's all part of your release. And it's, I'm assuming, and Ms. Mead can correct me, that that's in writing. I don't think they're going to assume there, but it just writes it down correctly. It's an agreement.
Through the chair.
Two others. Does the, is it your understanding under this bill, would the electronic monitor have a company that runs the monitor have a requirement to report somebody that's not filed, not where they're supposed to be, to the court right away?
Mr. Clayman, through the chair. Absolutely. I checked with the gentleman in Fairbanks, and they immediately do.
And then the,
through the chair.
Yeah, I apologize, Madam Chair. One last through the chair. I did actually ask my office to contact directors to find out the number of people on electronic monitoring, and apparently last week the number post-sentence on electronic monitoring was 4,730, and the number pre-trial on electronic monitoring through Department of Corrections was 447. So it actually, the numbers of folks that are on electronic monitoring with no change at all is actually quite high. That's all at this point.
Well, Madam Chair, to Representative Clayman on that, they are post and not pre, and I guess I would have to ask, you know, ask the question, maybe assumption is because the ones who are post-trial are actually getting credit for while they're out on electronic monitoring, with the others are not. And so what the hopes of the bill really is that the numbers pre-trial would increase and therefore keep their jobs, not be on the system, get the treatment we know they need, and have a better society because of it. So thank you so much for pointing that out. I appreciate it.
I would just follow up. Actually, 447 are pre-trial. This is not all post-trial. The 4,730 is post-sentence, but there is a number of pre-trial, so this isn't all about people that are post-sentence, and the electronic monitoring doesn't do anything to address the treatment issue, which has been a focus of the courts historically.
Representative Clayman, through the chair, and I guess I beg to differ on that, because with electronic monitoring, you may choose a treatment program with a monitor on that may not necessarily be a residential one. And absolutely, I understood that you had 400 pretrial, 4,000 post-trial, so it just shows a potential pretrial. Again, we heard from DOC that approximately 40% of those that are sitting currently in jail are waiting to have their cases heard. And I would hope that we would see more than the 400 because of that. And again, I also hope that DOC would become a part of that in areas of the state that doesn't have that option.
Further questions? Representative Ms. Mead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I neglected to put on the record, and I would like to, that the court system is neutral on this bill, and you probably already knew that.
We guessed.
Thank you.
Did you have a question, Representative Gruenberg?
I have two lines of questions, and these are really for Representative Wilson. As I recall, in this state, except for a capital crime or something like that, you have a right to bail. That's a constitutional right, which can only be circumscribed if you're either a flight risk or a danger to the community. Otherwise, you have a right to be out. And here, we're saying that because of certain monitoring equipment, it is presumptive, basically, that you're certainly not going to be a flight risk because you're monitored. I don't think it can really, in most cases, tell whether you're a danger to the community unless it shows that you're a member of a gang and you're going and associating with people who are otherwise prohibited, like if they're all wearing monitors and they see everybody clustering in an alley, then they can figure, well, you might be a danger to the community. So, if I'm right and we're proceeding from that premise, then why should it make a difference whether you're going to employment, etc.? Because your right to be out in bail is not dependent upon whether you're going to employment. You're neither a danger to the community nor a flight risk. For example, let's say somebody is is going to be home taking care of their children while their spouse is in the hospital having another baby or something. I mean, we have an, I'm sort of segueing into something else a little bit here. There may be other good reasons why the person should be out since they have that right anyway. And it seems that it says on line 4, page 2, for the purposes of, and it seems to be a language of limitation rather than exemplary of certain things that could cause the court to give you credit. But the core question through the chair, Representative Wilson, is if you have a right to be out, and if you're denied that right, and you're subsequently found guilty, isn't it kind of irrelevant why you're out, as long as you're neither a flight risk nor a danger to the community? You're giving up your constitutional rights, so you should get credit for it if you're subsequently found guilty. That's my question, kind of a complex question. Do you have any comment on that?
Representative Gruber, through the chair, you must have been an amazing lawyer, and I was not one and am not one, so I'm going to do my best on this.
Yeah, or you can get back to me.
I really would like to respond, if you don't mind, Representative Gruber, because there is a this isn't about whether you can make bail or not. You know, when I look down and I took some time this summer, and if you ever have the chance, I know this sounds very strange, but I took 12 hours and I shadowed the head of the corrections in Fairbanks, and I learned a lot. Because after 8 or 9 hours, everybody started talking to me about the things that were happening and ideas that they had, you know, to seeing this every day. And one of those was seeing people sitting in jail day after day with no, you know, watching cable TV, which I think should be changed to, like, public television instead, so that they may learn something. They don't even get out of their areas. They bring the food to them. Basically, the only thing they force them to do is change clothes once a week. And I don't know what happens if you don't, but that's the only thing they told me that they did. You could see that maybe as punishment. Personally, I'm thinking, you know, my friends are there. They're feeding me, clothing me. Might be better than what the outside world has to do. So what's the alternative? You know, and that's kind of my thinking when I got here to, you know, looking at this, as Madam Chair told me, this not-so-simple bill. We want people to be able to get back on their feet. Everybody makes a mistake. We've all made one. And sometimes, you know, maybe we could have gotten to the same trap as some of these have. Maybe we're just lucky and we just learned from our mistake. So how, you know, so this wasn't really even just about 101% of our courts or our jails are filled. This, to me, is a bill about how do we stop the cycle. Okay? And then I heard you quite well, and the others, the last hearing is, I don't want them just out playing video games or hanging out at the local park in a gang or whatever it is. I want certain conditions so that they realize that they have to step up to the plate, that what they're doing has been wrong, and we're going to give them a second chance, but they're going to have to follow some rules. And maybe it's the first rules they've ever had to really follow. And those rules are really up to the judges to determine how stringent that they want to get. So it's not just being out of bail and going doing all the things that you were doing. You have to do certain things to prove to the courts that you're wanting to turn and make things happen the right direction. So in this, you have that opportunity now to be able to get that second chance, but we're also telling them that if you do not abide by these, you lose that chance and you're back in jail. What we're doing right now is we're giving you credit for sitting and doing nothing versus getting out. And I'll never forget the call I got late one night when I had a gentleman call me. He'd been on an ankle monitor because he'd had an alcohol issue. 4 months. He had stopped drinking because he had the ankle monitor on there. And he was going to get zero credit for changing his life and being responsible to doing it. Yet, if they sat him in jail for 4 months, and whether you can get alcohol in some of these places or not, I've heard stories, you know, he turned his life. We give him no credit. And the guy who decides just to sit there and do nothing and wait for his, we get it. So, to me, this is the fair way for it. Does it answer all the questions? No, but I think it's a really good start to it. But again, I want to bring it back to the judges have the discretion as far as whether or not you qualify, what your restrictions have to be, and then you have to prove yourself at the end of it, or else you're right back in jail where you would have been in the first place.
I won't pursue that now. I want to think this through, and we'll probably talk.
I'm sure we will. I appreciate that, Representative Greenberg, through the chair.
Any further questions? All right. Then the last time that we met, we left public testimony open, and so I am going to continue public testimony, and we have three people on the line. So, open public testimony. The first person that we've got is Carrie Belden from the Department of Corrections. Carrie, are you online, and can you identify yourself for the record and tell us whom you're representing?
Yes, thank you. My name is Carrie Belden. I'm with the Department of Corrections. Thank you very much. Through the chair, as you can see, there's a lot of work and a lot of questions still on this bill, and we appreciate the sponsor working with us on this. One other topic that was mentioned, or not mentioned yet, was Interstate Compact. And the Interstate Compact is an agreement with all the states and the territories, and that allows for transfers of inmates, probationers, and parolees. And this Interstate Compact basically, you go through the compact, and it basically requires the receiving state to authorize and approve any placements or transfers. And as written, this bill could possibly put us in violation of that compact. So we would like the opportunity to continue working with the sponsors to go ahead and adjust that. And that's one of our main concerns.
So, Ms. Belden, how does it violate the interstate?
Okay, a really simple example is if a person is on EM and is in another state, and the judge sentences that person to time served, that would then make them no longer in inmate status, but would then place them on probation. And according to the compact, you need to go through the process, go through the compact, and allow that receiving state to grant us permission to let that probationer reside at that state. So by the ability of the judge to grant time served, it would violate that compact because we did not allow that receiving state the opportunity to review the case and accept the transfer or deny the transfer.
Okay. Ms. Belden, do you think you could put your comments in writing and give us some examples along with legal citations to these examples so that we can review them? And I see Representative Greenberg has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along with the Chair's request, it would seem to me that regardless of what form this bill comes out, that we could accomplish conformity with the convention, the compact, by simply referencing the compact to state except in circumstances governed by the compact where permission has to be sought from the initiating state, blah, blah, blah. It would seem to me you could have a fairly simple amendment to conform to the compact, and I'm sort of looking at you via the telephone and the sponsor via my visual, that you guys can get together with Ledge Legal and come up with a fairly simple fix for that problem. My question, don't you agree?
Ms. Belden?
Through the chair, yes, I do. That I think that would be an excellent idea.
Thank you. And so, Representative Greenberg, I'm going to task you to work with both the sponsor as well as with Ms. Belden to work something along those lines.
Through the chair, I'm delighted. I would ask you guys to come up with a solution And when the time comes as appropriate, I can put the amendment in, if you wish. Or you can do a new CS, whatever you guys want. Thank you. But I'll carry that.
Okay. Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Ms. Belden. Are you familiar with the, as a representative of the Department of Corrections, are you familiar with the trends and statistics about people on electronic monitoring within Department of Corrections?
I'm not a specialist, through the chair, sorry. I'm not a specialist on that, but I do have some knowledge on that.
Can you tell me, as kind of in rough terms, what percentages of folks are on electronic monitoring post-sentence and pre-sentence, and give us a description of what those trends have been in recent years?
Through the chair, right now, as of today, we have, I believe, 451 inmates who are sentenced on electronic monitoring right now. And that is an increase. We have been working very hard to really support our electronic monitoring program and try and really further the reentry portion of DOC.
Follow through the chair. Would it be fair to say that the Department of Corrections has been actually working pretty hard to identify any eligible person in custody that is post-sentence to try to get any that are reasonably eligible onto electronic monitoring and out of the prisons?
Through the chair, yes, we have been making a pretty good effort at trying to identify those people and seeing if they would like the opportunity for electronic monitoring, yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Ms. Belden? Thank you very much for testifying. The next person on the line is Quinlan Steiner. Quinlan, can you identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent?
Yes, thank you. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. I wanted to comment on this bill. Presently, there's opportunities for individuals to get credit for time when they enter residential treatment programs, but none for participation in outpatient programs. I think what this bill does is going to provide incentive and opportunity that would promote rehabilitative treatment and other rehabilitative activities and ultimately help reduce recidivism in this state. I think there are a couple of tweaks to the language that I have suggested to the bill sponsor and was indicated that they'd work with on that would sort of help facilitate that. But I think the bill as structured will generally have a positive promotion on reduction in recidivism. And I'd be happy to answer any specific questions.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Number one, I have a couple of questions, if I may. Number one, Mr. Steiner, have you had a chance to look at the P as in PAPA version of the bill?
Yes, I have.
Number two, through the chair. Does that meet the concerns you've expressed?
No, there's a concern on the judicial findings and how it's worded that conflicts with a case that I would recommend some changes on. It'd be the easy fix, and I don't think it would in any way compromise the intent of the bill.
Through the chair.
Go ahead.
If necessary, are you planning to work further with the bill sponsor to cure that problem?
Yeah, I'm gonna try and draft up some language that would cure my concern and provide it to the bill sponsor.
Follow up?
Yes.
Could you keep this committee apprised of your progress?
Certainly, I'd be happy to.
Next question to the chair.
Go ahead.
You've heard my comments about equal protection, that sort of thing. Have you had any chance to do any research on that?
No, I haven't done any research on that. You know, with bail, it's tricky because there's just a certain reality, which is people who have money can get out more easily than people who don't have money. It's just that simple. I mean, there's a lot of times, you know, the cash corporate requirement prevents people from getting out, and that's not on high-level offenses. That occurs on low-level offenses. That occurs at all levels, you know, and conditions can be layered on, and people who have money and people who have, you know, broader support networks can find third-party custodians who meet the requirements for a judge, and there's just an inherent disadvantage for people who don't have resources. I think one of the things that this opens up is the possibility of expansion by DOC into pretrial electronic monitoring to a greater degree, and they're more likely to be able to do a sliding scale. So as you expand pretrial release opportunities under things like this that would actually promote work and treatment, you might actually reduce sort of the desperate impact that bail can have on the community.
May I follow up, please?
Go ahead.
That helps, but it doesn't necessarily reduce the disparate impact on wealthy, non-wealthy, rural versus urban, and different racial and ethnic grounds. There may be more people, for example, Alaska Natives, etc., who live in areas that they couldn't take advantage of this, and different impact on people who of different races, etc., who may statistically not be able to advantage themselves of this. And
correct, but if DOC is able to expand into this because there's expansive opportunities for jail credit and rehab and promotion of rehabilitation treatment, you may see it expand to communities around the state. I understand the technology is getting better. You know, you don't necessarily need hard lines, so as communities open up cellular service, you might have expanded opportunities, which I think then would start to reducing impact on the desperate treatment that folks experience now.
Go ahead.
You are responding from the world of the practicing attorney. Sit for a moment in my seat as a lawyer who happens to be a legislator. We're interested in drafting something that follows the Constitution. And I'm not really asking a question because this is a work in progress, but I will be asking, as we go on and looking at some of these things, because what we have to do here is not just look at it from the practical implications of how it will work, but drafting something that will require the people who actually apply this new law in a manner that follows the Constitution. I'm looking at it as a drafting issue up front rather than as an application issue after the bill is signed into law, if you follow me. And I'd like to work with you and everybody else on this. My question, any comment?
If I understand you correctly, I don't think you're writing in an equal protection problem, if that's your question.
Yeah, that kind of was. We'll talk further.
I don't think that's the case.
And Representative Grunberg, I'd like to caution you that this is the appropriate time to be asking people questions. Afterwards, if you want to make policy statements, etc., that's fine, but please don't couch your questions in the way that we've got a long policy statement and simply then do you agree, which that seems to be getting us kind of down some rabbit holes.
No, that's not my intent. My intent is to see what the person's thought is on the issue as I see it. It is a legitimate question. It's not pontificating.
Thank you. That could be debated.
That would be pontificating.
Representative Clayman.
Mr. Steiner, I just want to query a little bit more about your description of the Department of Corrections flexibility. As we sit here today, the department doesn't need a court order for a person that is on in pretrial status and in custody who hasn't made bail. Department of Corrections today can decide, based on their security evaluation, to send that person out on electronic monitor and put him back in the community without a court order.
Yes, that's correct. But I don't believe in a pre-trial situation they're getting jail credit for that.
Well, that was you got ahead of that was my follow-up question. If you've got Mr. Smith and the court orders him on $1,000 bail, and Mr. Smith can't make bail, so he is returned to the Department of Corrections for holding pretrial, and the Department of Corrections then looks at Mr. Smith and says, "You're in our custody." Remarkably similar to Mr. Smith post-trial, and they. Corrections concludes that he's not a flight risk and they can keep track of him on electronic monitoring. He's still in their custody. He hasn't posted bail. And they give him electronic monitor and says, you can go home. Why doesn't he get credit for that time? He hasn't posted bail.
I don't know the answer to that. And it's news to me in this hearing that there's that many people on pre-trial electronic monitoring. That I'm going to have to look into because that hasn't been my understanding up to this point. That electronic monitoring was done at the defendant's request, but didn't result in jail credit. I don't know what it means to say that some 400 people are on EM pre-trial. You know, are those people on bail or are those people in DOC custody on EM? My belief before this hearing was that they were all on bail EM, not on DOC custody, at least at DOC's request. But I don't know. I need to answer that question. But
and I through the chair, I agree that's a very important distinction. But I let's assume that these people had they're like my example of Mr. Smith. He's got $1,000 bail, and corrections. Then he hasn't posted bail, and corrections hand him a monitor. Your office wouldn't necessarily know about it because the court didn't grant them a pretrial release on electronic monitor. It's corrections that's making that decision, and I guess I'm...
No, we'd know about it. I mean, they'd be our client, so we'd know if they were released. I can find out if that's occurring to any real degree. And the issue that I discussed earlier about, you know, DOC expanding into this area, there's nothing that prevents DOC from participating in a bail release program with electronic monitoring, even though it's done at the court's order. That's just traditionally not been what they do. You know, but there has been some discussion, as my understanding is, that they would contemplate expanding into that area, especially in rural Alaska, to promote pretrial release. I think what this bill does, if it grants jail credit, is to promote everyone getting involved in this because, you know, it has the capacity for promoting treatment and reducing recidivism. It might provide incentive to DOC to actually enter that arena and for clients to really push for that and set up treatment programs.
And through the chair, I certainly think you're raising interesting questions, although there is nothing today that prevents, I mean, there's nothing that requires DOC, if they believe somebody that is in their custody pretrial has not posted bail, there's nothing today that prevents them from getting engaged in a robust electronic monitoring program in which they let any number of people in into the community on electronic monitoring and would never have to go to the courts for permission to do so. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I don't know. I'd have to specifically look to make sure there isn't something that prevents that. I didn't look into that question and before this hearing, so I can't say for sure one way or the other. That might be true, it might not.
And then one more follow-up. So when we talk about bail conditions are when the court actually makes its own evaluation of the defendant, the crime, and the circumstances, and makes a determination about risk to the community and whether to release them. And you're raising the topic that the Department of Corrections might get on the bail in the bail business of working with defense attorneys to try to get defendants released to Department of Corrections custody as a bail release as opposed to people that are already in their custody
giving them electronic monitoring based on their discretion as an executive branch agency.
It's possible. I don't think there's anything that would prevent that that I'm aware of. And I know the topic has been discussed. And I think DOC's interest in treatment and reducing recidivism might add to the incentive if this bill can provide that. It's just less expensive way to provide monitoring and treatment.
So Mr. Steiner, let me see if I understand. Somebody doesn't make bail, so they are remanded to the department, and the department decides that they're going to release them through, and this is before sentencing, before conviction, they're going to release them because maybe the jail's too full for electronic, with electronic monitoring. In those cases, does somebody get credit?
I don't know the answer to that because I don't know how much that actually happens. That certainly never happened to any client I ever had, that DOC just released them pre-trial on EM. I mean, I don't know if that ever happens. What I heard here, there was 400 and some odd people who were on pre-trial electronic monitoring, and what I didn't understand was, is that a bail release, or was that someone in DOC custody who was just released on electronic monitoring?
All right.
So I don't know if that, and that's the question I said earlier. I didn't research that question. I don't know the answer.
Okay, and I see Ms. Mead.
Bail.
I think she might want to comment here.
I have a question to follow up, but she can comment then.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Mead.
To the chair, Nancy Mead from the Alaska court system, and I believe that Ms. Belden from the Department of Corrections earlier testified that the Department of Corrections has about 450 people total on electronic monitoring in their post-sentence, and I don't believe that the Department of Corrections has been putting, and again, Ms. Belden can correct me, has been putting people into electronic monitoring in more than a handful of situations pre-trial. And I don't know the answer, but I think that that's my information. So this bill, from the sponsor's point of view, would incentivize beginning a more robust program for DOC to put people on EM pre-trial. And I would agree with Mr. Steiner, of course, that I'm not sure if there is any statute that prevents that, but I don't believe that they're doing that, as I say, in any big numbers of cases.
And maybe is Ms. Belden still available?
So
have you been listening to this line of questioning, and can you maybe respond?
To the chair, yes. DOC EM right now has the 450 that are sentenced inmates. And this is an approximate number. I believe there's about 2,200 that are unsentenced, that are pre-trial, and DOC right now does not put pretrial people on EM, on DOC EM.
All right, thank you. Representative Kamen, and who is your question to?
It's for Ms. Belden.
Okay.
I'm kind of confused because I saw the Corrections Commissioner earlier this week, and I asked him how many people did they have on active post-sentence electronic monitor, and he gave me a number in the 4,000s, and I asked my office to follow up on that just before the hearing today, and the numbers I got back in terms of post-sentence, the figure we got back was 4,730 who were on electronic monitor post-sentence and 447 pre-trial. And I'm not quite sure how to square up what you're saying and what I heard from the Corrections Commissioner earlier this week. Can you explain that?
You're here. what we can do is I can double check those numbers and get back to you. I may misunderstood, or possibly the commissioner might have misunderstood the numbers, but what we can do is we can get those numbers to you, the correct numbers and accurate numbers.
And then a follow-up question, this one from Mr. Steiner. I understand you've been public defender for several years and may not be as actively involved in client management, but have you had in your experience, either yours or through other attorneys in your agency, have you had experience where people are in Department of Corrections custody pretrial because they can't post bail, and then the corrections transfers them to a halfway house, and they're actually being held in corrections bed in a halfway house pretrial?
I'd have to go check with folks. It has been a while. Most of the time, folks are in custody or the court releases them to a CRC. I don't know if corrections has now shifted towards putting pretrial folks in CRCs. It didn't used to be the case, was my recollection, but I can certainly check into that.
And a follow-up with Mr. Stein. Wouldn't you anticipate if somebody was released, let's say it's happening that they release, that corrections houses people they're not releasing them because they're still in custody. They house them in a halfway house. Would you expect the person in the halfway house, pursuant to corrections movement, that person would get jail credit for their time in the halfway house?
Yes, I would expect that to be the case.
All right.
And incidentally, we have Sherry Dagong from the Department of Corrections here in the audience, and I'm wondering whether Ms. Dagong would like to comment on any of this line of questioning that we've just had, and maybe can add something to the mix.
Madam Chairman, I'm Sherry Daigle from the Department of Corrections. Just one thing that I would like to clear up was the number issue. Our daily count for Department of Corrections, as of today, we have 451 offenders that are on electronic monitoring post-sentence. The 4,000 number, I'm not sure where that came from. I'm absolutely positive that the commissioner knows where that number fits into the mix, but we don't have that information for you today. But that is one thing I'm going to go back to the office right now, research, and we will have answers for you shortly.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Dagong or for anyone else? All right. And is there anyone in the audience, anyone else in the audience or online that wishes to testify? Then I am going to close public testimony with the option of perhaps opening it up the next time that we hear this bill. As I mentioned, we are not moving this bill out today. There seem to be a number of questions, and Representative Klayman has an amendment here that he can talk to the bill sponsor and the other committee members about before the next our next hearing on this bill. And so unless anybody else from the committee has any comments, it is 2:35, and we're going to wrap this up, and we are now adjourned.